Are you ready for an event unlike any other? Straight Talk Podcast and America's Sheriff David Clark present the first ever Badge of Honor Cruise. Sail on Royal Caribbean's Adventure of the Seas from December 7th to 13th for a week that celebrates police bravery and honor. This is not just an event. It's a movement to show support for law enforcement excellence. Join us for networking, podcast sessions, and a black tie gala where courage and honor are not just recognized, but celebrated. The event will feature other distinguished speakers and celebrities, such as Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Tom Homan, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. Reservations are open for cruise cabins and event badges, including General, VIP, and partner badges. We're also calling for nominations for officers who've shown exceptional service. Visit badgeofhonorcruise.com to reserve your badge level, book a room, and nominate a hero. Join us in celebrating our men and women in blue. Make your reservations today at badgeofhonorcruise.com.
226 officers lost their lives while on duty in 2022.
Blue lives matter in America.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to another episode of the Straight Talk Podcast with your host, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. Well, the Republicans have done it again. They sold us down the river. Speaker Mike Johnson, he has become the quintessential rhino. This is a guy who, when he was named Speaker of the House, we were told that he was a staunch conservative. And I told you, you know, you got to be careful when you hear that from people, that they're conservative and so on and so forth. And you've heard me talk about the difference between a conservative and a Republican. And I was willing to give Mike Johnson, you've heard me on this podcast, you can check the tape, I said I was willing to give him a chance. But I said I reserve the right to kick the tires. I reserve the right to hold off on full-throated support of him until I see his behavior, until I see him in action. Well, we've seen it. And we've seen it on more than one occasion. I don't overreact to this stuff. You know, every once in a while in politics, somebody who is usually reliable might misstep or might do something that's out of the ordinary. And you look and you go, what did they do that for? But you know what? They get back to who they are and they remain relatively consistent. To me, that's what a conservative does. And then there's Mike Johnson. And I made the decision that I'm done with Mike Johnson. I'm done with support for Mike Johnson. I hope the speakers seat is vacated. I hope a motion is made to remove him as speaker. Yes, I want to go that far. Now you might say, well, you know, that creates a lot of chaos and, you know, we're getting close to the election and you know, that I don't care about that. I care about principled conservatism. I care about the Constitution. That comes first. As a matter of fact, the way I see it, if the speaker's seat is vacated, if they move to vacate him, and they can't come up with another successor, and they go through person after person and hundreds of votes, leave it vacant for the rest of this congressional term, till after November. And then we'll see what happens after the November elections, and if the GOP, because there's no guarantees in politics, if the GOP maintains control of the House, they can pick a new speaker. But until then, you know what? With no speaker, guess what happens? No business can be conducted. Good. Because that means no more damage can be done by this inept class of Republicans. So let's examine a little bit of what Mike Johnson's done recently that is turned me against him. He's a turncoat. He's a traitor. His position before he became, his position after he became speaker. No Ukraine funding until we get some significant changes on border policy that has to be included. That's what he said. Any Ukraine funding bill, he said, has to come with improvements on border security. He also said he would not vote in favor of Section 702 remaining in place that allows the FBI and other intel agencies, the government, to spy on American citizens on U.S. soil. He said he would not do it. He would not bring it up for a vote to extend it because it's set to expire. Well, he did it. And he cast the deciding vote to allow the government to continue with the authority to spy on American citizens without a warrant. He was the deciding vote. It was tied. He cast the last vote and he voted in favor of it. You know, I believe the intel and, you know, this is serious. No. It's not what the Constitution says. You believe the intel. The Constitution doesn't say the government must get a warrant unless you believe the intel. He reversed course. I mean, that's a 180, ladies and gentlemen. That's not a slight departure. He said he wouldn't do it. And he claimed, well, this is too important, and this is about national security. There is no exception, no national security exception to the Fourth Amendment. I read the Fourth Amendment in the last episode. It's very clear. With few exceptions, there are exceptions to the warrant requirement. It's not that one. So now we get another 2 years, and I guess we're supposed to be happy with that because they were looking for a five-year extension, but they only got two. And then in 2 years, they'll extend it again anyway. And then there's the Ukraine funding that he brought to the floor without the guarantees of increased and improved border security, southern border security. And he moved a bill through to fund Ukraine and to fund Israel. You know what? Israel doesn't need our help. Netanyahu has said so. You know, just say, hey, stay out of the way. They'd probably like to have it, you know, additional aid and so on and so forth. But unlike Ukraine, you know, we're totally funding their war effort. Totally. You know what I heard Mike Johnson say? Quote from his mouth, well, I'd rather send Ukraine bullets than our boys. That's a false choice. There has to be limits to this stuff. And there has to be guidelines, and there are none. Do you know they can't even account for a lot of the military supplies that we've sent over there, and they can't account for the money? How does the Congress even know that this is going toward the war effort? So he was able to get the bill through, Ukraine funding, with mainly Democrat votes. What does that tell you? Johnson had to rely on Democrat votes to pass this thing. That means to me, it's a Democrat bill. Biden has already said he supports the bill that Johnson's going to take up. He said that last week. That means it's a Democrat bill. Because if they would have put more border security protections in there and guarantees, Biden would have been against it. As a matter of fact, Chuck Schumer told him, don't you be sending anything over here that has anything to do with the southern border. This guy's like dancing, Johnson, dancing to the tune of the Democrats. You call that being a rock solid principle conservative? I don't. So I hope, like I said, I hope, and there's a growing number, by the way. This isn't just Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz anymore. There's some prominent Republicans in the House who have signed on to their threat to remove him. several noted Republican House members have said, I'm going along with voting to remove him if this goes through. Folks, Nancy Pelosi never had to rely on Republican support to get a bill through. Nancy Pelosi knew how to keep her members in line. They weren't all fans of hers, but they dared not cross her. They knew better. They were afraid of her. She takes some bill that the Republicans were entirely against, and she didn't care. It was a strict party line vote. She says, I got the votes. We're going to get this through. And none of her members strayed, ever. And she knew going in, or she wouldn't have called it up for a vote. She went back and did some more arm twisting until she got those on board who were hemming and hawing, Democrats. She never had to get a bill passed, especially a controversial one, with Republican help. She used her majority, kept everybody on the farm, and she got it through. Why can't Republican speakers do that? I don't get this. Boehner couldn't do it. Paul Ryan couldn't do it. McCarthy couldn't do it. And now Mike Johnson can't do it. What in the heck is wrong with this party? Having to rely on Democrats. And you know what? No Democrat would go for this if it was not to their liking. They wouldn't. This is what we're stuck with. I hope this comes quick. This move to vacate the speaker's chair. See? I hope it comes quick. I hope it comes this week. And you know what? They can just leave it vacant. And all that means is, you know, the business of the House comes to a halt. Good. They're doing enough damage. We won't miss it. They won't be able to spend any more money, which is why somebody should have moved to vacate it before this Ukraine vote. That way, that thing wouldn't have been able to come to the floor for a vote. You know, you got to learn how to play chess, Republicans. This isn't checkers. It's chess. If you wanted to stop that Ukraine bill with all that Democrat support, and you knew that Johnson had the votes to do this, you should have made a move to vacate last week before this thing could have advanced to the floor for a vote. This happens every time with us, conservatives, and some Republicans. It happens every time. We get sand kicked in our faces by our own leaders. You know, now all of a sudden Mike Johnson goes from, you know, the label of being a staunch principled conservative to a freaking rhino. Maybe it's there's something in the air, in the water. In Congress, you know, in the water fountains or whatever, the water cooler. That when you drink from it, you lose your soul. You lose your courage. You lose your backbone. I mean, Johnson buckled to Biden and Schumer's threats. Pelosi and Schumer never buckled to Trump's threats. It's just amazing. I get sick. I said, I'm sick of it. And it only happens to us, conservatives. We're the ones that always lose out. We're always the ones that get the short end of the stick. We're always the ones that are told, you know, given some excuse, well, we can't because, you know, of this. It's just amazing. It's so disheartening to watch this. And it just continues to happen. So we'll see what happens with that threat of a motion to vacate the speaker's chair. Like I said, I hope it happens. And I hope it just stays vacant. Let's get through the November election, see what happens. If the GOP retains control of the House, they can pick a new speaker. And maybe finally pick one that's got a backbone. Man, is Mike Johnson just... thoroughly disappointed me. Probably many of you as well. Wow, we don't know what to do with power. The Republicans, they do not know what to do with power. The Democrats are in the minority in the House, and they're basically running the House of Representatives. They're running the House of Representatives, and they're in the minority. You got a bill put through this Ukrainian aid that the Democrats got across the finish line for Johnson. Johnson didn't have the Republican votes to either pass it or defeat it. And all this crap, you know, about, oh, well, we have to fund Ukraine because, you know, our allies. But then when it comes to Israel, all of a sudden, it changes. That is a losing proposition in Ukraine. It's time for a negotiated settlement. It's time for Zelensky to be told, that's it, man. Game's up. Get to the negotiation table. And all these threats you hear about, well, if Putin gets into Ukraine, then he'll go on to all these other, you know, bordering nations. And he's not going to have the army to do that. His military is being decimated. Where is he going to get the military resources to go into other areas? I mean, this should have started with, you know, when they went into, what was it, Crimea? We didn't seem to have a problem there. Amazing. Anyway, let's go on to something else here. Do you know there's a gunpowder shortage in the United States? Speaking of the Ukraine war, it has come to light that the gunpowder supply is starting to run dry for the military and for gun users. Boy, how did this happen? You know how it happened? Ukraine. We are weakening our ability to militarily respond to other areas of the world, including in our own defense, because we're running short on munitions. I've talked about that on this podcast previously. Stockpiles are dwindling. Bombs. Bullets. So we're allowing the defense of the United States to lessen because of Ukraine? And that's in our best interest? And nobody in Washington seems to care. And every time somebody opens their mouth and says, well, they're an ally and we have to do everything we can because it's a vital interest, they should ask these people, how are our stockpiles? I'm telling you right now that if China decided to go into Taiwan next week, there ain't a damn thing the United States could do. If North Korea, because they have nukes, if North Korea invaded South Korea next week, there is not a damn thing the United States could do. This is not a good position to be in, either defensively or offensively. You can't respond to other areas of the world because, well, you don't have the weaponry. So it says here there's some hearings on Capitol Hill. Members of Congress announced legislation Thursday to prod the Biden administration to conduct an inventory of the U.S. gunpowder supply chain and offer suggestions to ensure enough will be available for the military and the average consumer. Quote, this administration creates as many ridiculous hurdles as possible to restrict law-abiding gun owners' access to affordable guns and ammunition, said Senator James Risch, Republican of Idaho. He said legislation will force transparency on the White House. No, it wasn't. The Biden administration doesn't give a damn what Congress thinks. They don't give a damn what the Constitution says. They don't give a damn what the Supreme Court rules. He said you can't do the student loan program, and Biden is still doing it. Transparency? Remember that word last in the last podcast when I talked about Section 702? where some member of Congress said, you know, this will force more transparency in the process of the FISA. And I reminded the listeners, I said, you listeners, I said, transparency, it's a secret process. So we're supposed to be fooled by these. Remember I said I read critically? I read words because words matter. And I thought, here's that word again. Here it is again. He said, and this is Risch, the senator from Idaho, the legislation will force transparency on the White House. They're probably on the floor laughing already in the White House. Nothing's transparent. In terms of what they're doing, what they're up to, the Congress and the White House, nothing's transparent. So there are other European officials who are also concerned about the scarcity of gunpowder. Gunpowder! So this bill is being proposed, states that, quote, Congress remains concerned about the domestic supply and production of nitrocellulose and worries that a supply chain failure could restrict ammunition manufacturing for large and small calibers, harming the commercial marketplace and placing the warfighters at risk. They're risking the national security of the United States by continuing to give our gunpowder, bullets, and weaponry and bombs away to Ukraine. So it says here the ammunition industry is still struggling with a shortage of percussion caps. Like gunpowder, the caps are crucial to a usable round of ammunition. Few nations produce nitrocellulose. Nitrocellulose is an ingredient used in making gunpowder. Thailand, China, and India are considered the most significant players. Thailand. The U.S. is a net importer. We don't make it ourselves. We don't produce it ourselves. So it says here, the Russia-Ukraine war has created a massive sinkhole for munitions, and China has tightened its supplies. Oh, surprise, surprise. Crippling us in other ways. China. Weakening us militarily. China. The consensus was that China was reluctant to sell to the U.S. because so much of the supply was being pumped into munitions for Ukraine. See? China's involved in Ukraine, and it's not costing them hundreds of billions of dollars. They just cut off the supply to an ingredient used in making gunpowder. Defense industry manufacturers are scarfing up much of the supply reaching the U.S. European officials say the scarcity is affecting the ability to rearm Ukraine. This stuff is, it's just, I come across it, and I just honestly just shake my head. I go, you got to be kidding me. And this stuff never makes, you know, headline news. You got to read deep. You got to dig to find this stuff. I'd be willing to bet 90% of the American people don't know about this lack of gunpowder supply and how it's weakening us militarily. And it's also going to have an impact on gun owners here in the United States when they can't find ammunition or the price goes through the roof. Bidens don't care about that, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know where this all ends, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we're fiddling around talking about stuff that has no impact on anything. Stuff coming out of Washington, D.C. This whole damn trial with Trump and the hush money and so on and so forth captures the headlines, wiped everything else off the front page. Sometimes I think this done, not sometimes, this stuff's done on purpose. We have glommed on to this shiny object once again, the Trump trial. It's all I'm hearing about. The shiny object. and we fall for it. I mean, daily reports, you know, and just hourly reports and breaking news. Juror number three, or, you know, and just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just wired differently. I don't care about that kind of crap. That's all tabloid journalism. That's all it is. It means nothing to the average American. It has, you know, the American people. No bearing on it whatsoever. And then you got all these damn protests from these pro-Palestinian idiots. These. I got to kind of watch it because the boys and girls might be listening. But they're in full force, I guess. And this is the way this leftist movement works. You know, it started small. You had a couple protests here and there, a couple people, you know, squawking and, you know, with their nursery rhymes, you know, we charge you with genocide. That stuff is stupid. It's very juvenile. And if they're not getting enough attention, they up the ante. So last week, these protests broke out all throughout the United States on cue, blocking bridges, blocking roads, shutting down transportation. And this stuff is tolerated. It's not allowable under the Constitution. I wish people would stop, you know, calling it peaceful protest. No, it's civil disobedience. Subjects you to arrest. But you know what? Arrests are only going to be so effective, or effective so much. There's a limit to it, what an arrest will do. You look at your states that have no bail policies. So they arrest them. Okay, they can move them out of there then. All right. So that's a useful tactic in terms of opening the roadway. But then what? I'm hearing that they have a legal defense fund and they have money set aside in an operation that if you get arrested for any of this stuff, you know, they'll produce. Well, first of all, when I heard that, I said, wait a minute, many of these states like California, they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge last week. They have no bail policies. They don't need bail money. They take them in, they write them a summons, and they let them go. That's tying up police resources. I would just bodily drag them out of the way. Drag them. Open up the roadway. It's a public safety menace. Not to mention, and this is, you know, this is an important aspect of this. I have constitutional rights too, and one of them is freedom of movement. These people are obstructing my freedom of movement. And what, I can't respond? Like hell I can't. Now, remember, I've said this before and I always advise it. It's got to be reasonable. In other words, people are blocking the roadway. You can't pull out your firearm and start firing shots at it. It's not reasonable. But dragging them out of the way is. I'm talking about by citizens, not by cops, by citizens. Pushing them out of the way so you can continue to move forward. They're restricting your freedom of movement. If I have to get to work or I got to go here, or I'm trying to catch a flight. I mean, they blocked the entrance to O'Hare International Airport. Gas them and get them out of the way. The hell with arrest? They have no bail policies in Chicago and Illinois. Clear the roadway is job one. Clear the roadway. By any reasonable means necessary, including by U.S. citizens. But I would just, I'd gas them, tear gas, police I'm talking about, and the beanbags, and any of this less than lethal force. I'd deploy it and arrest you, gas you, then drag you up on the sidewalk or out of the way and let you sit there and writhe in pain. You're not going to die. Your eyes are burning, You know, you know what happens with the effect of tear gas? Clear the roadway. Immediately. It takes the police too long to respond to this stuff. First they show up and they just stand there. Waiting for orders. I'm not being overly critical of the frontline officer. I'm blaming the damn higher-ups in the administration. They're afraid. They're afraid to give the order to use reasonable force. I never was. As a sheriff. Matter of fact, it was a situation in Milwaukee. I was a sheriff where 100 demonstrators went onto the freeway system in the interchange in downtown Milwaukee at rush hour. I gave the order immediately to the commander on the scene, the authority to use tear gas. And he said, I think we can get them out of here quickly. There were 100 of them, 80 of them went to jail. Well, we cleared it quickly. But I gave him the authority to use tear gas. I'm not fooling around. Then again, they don't make police leaders like me anymore. So anyway, Senator Tom Cotton, guy I like. It's irrelevant that I like him, but I just thought I'd throw that in there. Tom Cotton doubles down on comments urging people to forcibly remove protesters blocking traffic. He's repeatedly urged people delayed by traffic stemming from pro-Palestinian demonstrations to take action against protesters, including forcibly removing them. The people who are blocking you. This is a quote from him. Absolutely, I support people. I support people if they're blocked by traffic, by pro-Hamas vigilantes in the street. I like that language. They should get out of their cars. They should move them to the side of the road, or they should let traffic continue, Cotton told NBC News. Asked if he was calling for violence against protesters. First of all, they're not protesters. Cotton said he wasn't. And that's always that gotcha question. Oh, so you're advocating for violence? No, but I'm advocating for clearing the damn roadway. That'd be my response. I understand that trick question. Are you advocating for violence? So a quote from Cotton, I'm saying that if people are trying to get to work to pick up their kids from school or take a sick kid to the doctor and you have pro-Hamas vigilantes blocking the streets, they should get out and move those people off the street, Cotton said. The police will get there eventually, but a lot of damage will be done in the meantime. And that's what I mean when I say the police are too slow to respond to this. And when I do get there, the first moments is just standing. I spent just standing there. They said, jump on those damn cars and immediately start dragging those people out of the way. Have your pepper spray ready and your batons in case they start to resist and you have to up the ante of force use and clear the damn roadway. The people will love you for it. Instead of just coming there and standing in a line and watching. Cotton on Monday urged people delayed by traffic stemming from pro-Palestinian demonstrations to, quote, take matters into their own hands. I second that motion. I second that motion. The rule of law has been obliterated. Law and order doesn't exist anymore. It's every person for themselves. Just do it reasonably. Quote Cotton again, I encourage people who get stuck behind pro-Hamas mobs blocking traffic, take matters into your own hands and get them out of the way. It's time to put an end to this nonsense, Cotton wrote Monday on the social media site X. Further quote, another quote from Cotton, if something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by people whose rode their blocking, Cotton said, and if they glued their hands to the car or the pavement, well, it would probably be pretty painful to have their skin ripped off, but I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas. Again, I second that motion. Start gluing themselves to, you know, it happened at some sporting event where somebody went onto the court, a basketball court, and glued their hands to the floor. Drag them out of there. Rip the skin off. Well, you know, it's to get for teach you a lesson. It's not deadly force. We put up with this crap, and the left knows it. And that's why they resort to these tactics. They're not going to do anything to us. Might get arrested, but we'll be back next week. California Highway Patrol Chief Don Goodbrand said, you can protest anywhere you want. First of all, no, you can't. But it is unlawful to block a roadway and to prevent people from getting to work, emergency personnel from getting to help people. You can't do it. You can tell them they can't do it. I maintain they can do it if you let them. And that's what we're doing right now. We're tolerating all this nonsense in the United States. And it isn't just with this pro-Hamas garbage. It's with our schools. It's in our streets. The crap we put up with. Where a school administrator is going to tell you what they're going to do to your kid. And we just, and the left just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing with no pushback or very little pushback. We're trying to use the system to do it. You know, these institutions, the courts, the police, elections. The left's made it clear they don't care about that crap anymore. They don't care about elections. They don't care about the rule of law. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about parental rights. They don't care about the fact that the roadway was made for cars, for vehicles, for the movement of traffic. They don't care about that. Well, why the hell should we care about them? Yeah. David Clark is one of those, do unto us as they do, or do unto them as they do unto us. That's my motto. So let's move into the war in Gaza. There was a move in the UN, that useless entity. That you know, one of the things that I, should the United States, should Trump win election November, one of the things, one of, it's got a lot, it's going to have a lot to do. Tell the UN, pack your bags, clean out your desks, and get the hell out. Let the UN open up somewhere else. So there was a motion on last week Thursday, United Nations Security Council, a resolution that would have recognized a Palestinian state. Well, it was vetoed. The only reason it was vetoed is because the United States exercised the lone veto. And with the United States UN Security Council, it only takes one, there's 15 members, member nations. It only takes one member to totally veto a resolution. The story says 12 nations, including China and Russia, voted to allow the Palestinians membership in the United Nations. One country abstained, and then the United States voted no, which killed the whole thing. Now, that's, I know that's 14. It says there's 15 members. It doesn't say why the vote, well, only 14 voted. It's significant at this point. So anyway, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, who's a puppet, by the way, of the United States government, sharply criticized the veto, saying in a statement, it was unfair. Listen to this guy's language. Abbas. Unfair, immoral, of all people to talk about morality. Unjustified and defies the will of the international community, which strongly supports the state of Palestine obtaining full membership in the United Nations. First of all, there is no state of Palestine. So anyway, Foreign Minister for Israel praised the U.S. for vetoing what he called a shameful proposal. The proposal, quote from the Foreign Minister of Israel at the UN, the proposal to recognize a Palestinian state more than 6 months after the largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust and after the sexual crimes and other atrocities committed by Hamas terrorists was a reward for terrorism, Kotz wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter, after the veto. So, you know, the United States, whoever the ambassador is, he did a little dancing. You know, first he talked about, well, yeah, the Palestinians and, you know, shame on them, they're bad. And first of all, they tried to talk Abbas out of not pushing this thing at this particular point in time, and he defied them. See, nobody has any respect for the Biden administration. Nobody. Everybody's just doing whatever they want to do throughout the world. These nations, these countries. So, by the way, you should follow me on X. It's at Sheriff Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E. I post a lot of the stuff that I'm unable to talk about on this podcast only because of time constraints, but I comment on a lot of the political stuff going on, excuse me, throughout the world. It's pretty good stuff. And I don't just throw up inflammatory stuff. I usually link it to an article I find, story. And I'll link the article, and then I'll comment on the article. So again, that's on X, at Sheriff Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E. So, the Biden administration is dancing now. You know, they're half in, half out on Israel. On one hand, they say, Israel has the right to defend itself. And on the other side of their mouth, they say, but they have to exercise restraint. I've posted this story on X, excuse me, and I put a comment on there. Oh, this will be interesting. Wait till Rashida Tlaib finds out about this. And I said that because, as you know, she is pushing this movement in Michigan to vote uncommitted as it relates to Biden. She got a lot of people to do it. And they had their primary. You know, Biden was overwhelmingly. He won that primary election, but a significant, I don't think, is it 15% of the people voting in the Democrat primary voted uncommitted? That's huge. They still don't have an answer for what they're going to do going into November. With states like, there's a big contingent of Muslims in Minnesota. They're holding out, and there's some other states, too. They're not happy with Biden. Good. Nobody's happy with Biden. So staying on this topic of these Israel-Hamas war, some data's rolling in, some research data, not propaganda, some research data on casualties in Gaza as it relates to the war. You know, you got all these clowns running around, Palestine, free Palestine, and genocide, and all that other BS. That's exactly what it is. It's all BS. There's data to support it. There's no data to support these pro-Palestinian idiots. But there's data rolling in, and it suggests that what the Israeli defense forces the IDF's been able to do in urban warfare in Gaza is remarkable. And I'm talking about positively. And there's this story here points out how difficult urban warfare can be in terms of limiting civilian casualties. And it's finding out the data, and these researchers are finding out that Israel should be held up as a model, their military, on how to conduct urban warfare, limiting civilian casualties. Oh, I thought it was genocide. It's all Hamas propaganda. And people are swallowing it whole, including the Biden administration. Biden's always talking about the civilian casualties. It's war. You've heard me say that. It's ugly, it's bloody, and it's going to be collateral damage from time to time. But Israel's not targeting civilians like Hamas targets civilians. So let me read some of this from this story. I found this fascinating. I'm not hearing a lot about it from CNN, from MSNBC. From the New York Times, from the Washington Post, but I heard from them on all these casualties of women and children and starvation and famine and genocide. It's all BS. So it says here, Israel's powerful military machine has carried out what has been described as an unspeakably brutal massacre, even a genocide against innocent civilians trapped in the Gaza Strip. But data shows the campaign to defeat Hamas and the densely populated Palestinian enclave is one of the most careful and surgical operations in recent human history. Well, what do you know? It says here, the war has resulted in a lower ratio of civilian to combatant deaths than other high-profile urban battles this century, including some directly involving the U.S. Oh. The civilian versus combatant death ratio is less than 2-to-1, and what analysts describe as one of the most difficult and complex urban warfare operations ever attempted. It is also far less than the 2016-2017 Battle of Mosul, a U.S.-backed operation to defeat Islamic State terrorists who control the city. Some observers stress that the actual number of civilian casualties is probably lower than what Hamas claims. Oh, no kidding. As soon as Hamas put out those numbers, I smelled a rat, and I said so on this podcast. And I don't believe it. Well, why don't you believe it? Tell them to prove it. Well, they have no proof. Well, that's why I don't believe it. The militants have a vested interest in publicly portraying Israel as a ruthless aggressor. The Biden administration has threatened to change its policy toward Israel because of the civilian deaths in Gaza. President Biden underscored that position during a tense phone call with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Administration officials have rejected some of the most incendiary accusations against Israel. Oh, you mean like genocide? Defense Secretary Austin Lloyd told lawmakers this month the U.S. officials don't have any evidence of genocide in Gaza. Oh, tell that to these idiot protesters or demonstrators. These useful idiots. Tell them there's no evidence of genocide. So it says these figures and the ones that the true figures have had an undeniable, undeniable impact on Israel's war efforts. The unsubstantiated numbers provided by Hamas have been regurgitated by the White House, the Pentagon, and the media. So here's a guy here who's a researcher. And he says this, quote, he's a leading scholar on urban warfare, who has tracked the Israeli-Hamas war extensively. See, that's where the U.S. government and the administration should be getting their information from. He says here, I don't even know how to explain it in words. It's combat in hell, said Mr. Spencer. It's being given an impossible mission, but still finding a way, he said, but the world said it's not good enough. It certainly no longer seems good enough for the Biden administration. There are too many civilians being killed, says this White House national security spokesman. There are things that need to be done. There are too many civilians being killed. Now, this is interesting here. It's unclear, the story says, whether a specific number defines too many. See, that's what I say when people, when you listen and you read critically, and people say these generalities. They say, well, there's too many civilians being killed. Well, what's the right number? That's what the reporter needs to ask him. Or is there a correct number? Or are you looking for zero? Because zero isn't going to happen in war. But you let people get away with these generalities. Oh, there's still too many civilians being killed. So anyway, quote, no, early in the war, just weeks after the Hamas invasion and massacre of more than 1,200 civilians in Israel, the administration conceded that civilian casualties were inevitable if Israel was to crush Hamas once and for all. This is war, is a quote. It is combat. It's bloody. It's ugly. And it's going to be messy. And innocent civilians are going to get hurt going forward, Mr. Kirby told reporters on October 24. I wish I could tell you something different. I wish that wasn't going to happen, but it's going to happen. So it says here, the figures show that Israel is being held to an unrealistic standard that virtually no other modern military has had to face. The idea that there's a better way to conduct this operation, he said, is not backed by the history of anybody who's ever had to face this. It's just not, he said. The one alternative people have been advising is to not do a ground invasion, just do surgical strikes. There's no historical evidence to say that you can destroy an army with just raids or surgical strikes. Underlying the debate are questions about whether Hamas data should be trusted at all. Although U.S. officials, including Biden, have cited these unverified figures, some scholars see ample reason to be skeptical. Perhaps what is happening in the Gaza Ministry is releasing fake daily numbers that vary too little because they do not have a clear understanding of the behavior of naturally occurring numbers. So Israel should be applauded. Applauded. But they won't be by the liberal media. It won't be by these mindless little numbskull pro-Hamas anti-Semitic demonstrators. This is unbelievable. When the truth starts to seep to the top, through all the lies and the propaganda, the story usually changes. Good for Israel. And I hope that they do go forward with that incursion into Rafah, or Haifa, as Biden said the other day. Called it Haifa. They got to finish the mission once and for all. Thanks for joining me.
When you talk about race, crime, and politics, some folks lose sleep over this, but not me, because I sleep just fine on my Giza Dream Sheets and Pillow from MyPillow, especially this new 2.0. If you haven't gotten yours yet, you are missing out. Just go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Clark, that's C-L-A-R-K-E, and save up to 66% off. The direct link is also available on my website, AmericaSheriff.com. Get a great night's sleep so we can continue the fight. Friends, I want to thank you for listening to today's episode of Straight Talk with yours truly, America's Sheriff David Clark. And a special thank you also goes out to our sponsors. My goal, as always, is to break down these complex and many times controversial issues and bring it to you straight with a little dose of common sense, no media bias, no talking points, just truth. And this podcast would not be possible without your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place to listen. And please share this message of common sense on social media. For more content, be sure to follow me on Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This podcast is brought to you by AmericaSheriff.com with executive producer Judy Wilkinson of JL Wilkinson Consulting and producer Josh Wentz in partnership with our friends at Bulldog Media. If you are interested in partnering with Straight Talk Podcasts or having me speak in your area, please contact Judy at jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. 706-518-2116. That's jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. Phone number 706-518-2116.